AK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Some clarification on the Los Angeles protests against federal immigration police. 300 National Guard troops are now deployed in L.A. Out of 2,000, the Trump administration says have been activated. It's supported by Congressman Marlon Stutzman, Indiana Republican.
We're continuing to see this violence, and I don't think that we as Americans should put up with it, you know, whether it's in California or whether it's in Indiana.
There's no violence seen today so far. The protests are confined to just a few blocks of downtown L.A., and Paramount, a town south of Los Angeles. 11 protest arrests last night in L.A., police say. Iran's intelligence minister has claimed without offering evidence that they've seized what he calls an important treasury of documents regarding Israel's nuclear program. Russian officials say they're waiting for confirmation from Ukraine on a planned exchange of 6,000 bodies of soldiers killed in action. Russia's accusing Ukraine of delaying the process. This is ABC News. So far, no indication that any repairs are being made to this, says ABC News senior political correspondent Rachel Scott in Washington.
In a matter of hours, the relationship between the world's most powerful man and the world's richest went up in flames.
Elon and I had a great relationship. I don't know if we're well anymore.
A public meltdown of an alliance that helped Donald Trump win the White House.
Come on up here, Elon.
And define the first 4 months of the Trump presidency.
This is what victory feels like.
Crumbling in spectacular fashion.
I'm very disappointed in Elon. I've helped Elon a lot.
The president telling me this weekend he has no plans to talk to Elon Musk.
ABC's Rachel Scott. 6 decades after the federal government ordered Louisiana's Concordia Parish to desegregate its schools, the district remains racially divided. One high school mostly black, another school about 60% white. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Matt and Air on Air.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor.
Remember the film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? A driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, you're going the wrong way. And Candy and Steve Martin go, ha, 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 how do they know where we're headed? Congress and the administration are saying, this is what we're going to do for our budget. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Carmelo Anthony for the Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. As federal electric vehicle incentives face potential rollbacks, a new study is highlighting the burden of gasoline costs on Black and Latino drivers. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The Fuel Equity Report shows Blacks and Latinos are super users of gasoline, spending on average 15% of their paycheck to fuel their cars. The median household income for Blacks and Latinos in Wisconsin is between $31,000 and $46,000. Dr. Shelley Francis with EV Hybrid Noir says systemic factors like disinvestment in public transportation, economic segregation, and long commute times all contribute to the disproportionate impact.
They're also more likely on average to be driving these older, less fuel efficient cars due to income as well as financing barriers that they may experience.
The study says EV adoption could save Blacks and Latinos an average of $4,900 a year on fuel and maintenance, but barriers like affordability, charging access, and education persist. The report found the top 10% of Black and Latino gasoline users are generally concentrated in smaller cities and rural areas. The study suggests targeted policies to encourage equitable adoption of EV for Black and Latino communities, including enhancing purchase incentives, expanding financing options, and increasing charging infrastructure in communities where top gasoline users live. Francis says addressing the big misinformation gap about EVs is also crucial.
pushing more of those types of stories out there to show like the everyday driver. It's not some fancy person living out in a castle somewhere. And it's just regular folks who are trying to work, make ends meet, and provide for their families.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Skies turning partly to mostly cloudy across the area for today as showers and thunderstorms develop. Some areas of smoke as well. Highs in the lower 70s and a west to southwest wind. Tonight, showers, a few storms around with lows in the lower 50s. Currently, it's 68 degrees.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, oil and gas industry expert Matt Randolph, also known as Mr. Global, will be here to talk about all things energy in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
The show for another week. I'm Mark Becker, your host on the Rational Revolution here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, we have podcasts of the show and everything like that. So if you want to listen, download it, like us on Facebook, subscribe, do all of those things, share the episode, listen to it as many times as you want, because I would want to listen to this guy who's here for, and this is like, I'm so glad that he's here. Your friend and mine, returning guest, Ahmad Rivera Wagner, representing Green Bay. You're in studio.
I know.
What's up, man?
I love being here. It's kind of fun.
I'm so happy to have you here. Like, because I you're someone that we were talking off the air about how much I respect the fact that he, you know, the motto here is it's not about what's left versus what's right. It's about what's right versus what's wrong.
That's right.
And
that's
you do
right.
That every single day, and I wish more people did. There's so much we could talk about.
Yeah.
How is it going?
One of the coolest things is representing the city of Green Bay. And I like to talk about that so much because people just forget this. Like, they forget there was the third largest city in the state. There's this notion that it stops after Madison and Milwaukee. Yeah. And there's Green Bay. We obviously own a stadium and the biggest, smallest market for an NFL team. But we also have other things that are really incredible. Yeah. We are the most racially diverse state after Milwaukee. We're actually more racially diverse than Madison.
I didn't know that.
Obviously, my favorite data point is that we're the number one place to live in the country.
Yeah.
There really is something magical in Green Bay about what we believe, that we reward work here, that if you show up as a meat packer, or a paraprofessional, a professor, or a politician, you can plant your seed and grow. And that is something really beautiful and amazing about this community. And we do it in a way where we're building a Green Bay for everybody. Yeah. And I think that is a beautiful thing that I get to represent. So that's really fun. Madison is, Madison's not Green Bay.
Yeah.
I think sometimes the old tropes are true. I can see why people are frustrated and annoyed by politicians and politics. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes, before I got in this role, we often talked about Madison as the capital was a place where good ideas go to die. I understand that on a deeper way, but I am a person that believes in hope springs eternal, that we have to model the kind of behavior and policies and engagement that we think we should be seeing, and that we can't just succumb to the standard. We have to create a new standard. And to me, I'm not doing anything different than I would do just in the city of Green Bay. But I recognize that that is changing the way that we're doing things in Madison. And so even if I'm an anomaly for now, I'm okay with that. But, Madison is a cage fight that I was about things that we shouldn't be cage fighting about.
I think that Madison, at least for the last 15 years, for sure, that has been a place where good ideas have gone to die. And I feel like I was, because that's when, for those listening, if you don't, that's when the redistricting happened.
Right.
And we went from a state that had representative democracy, which is a cool thing.
Right.
To a state that even if they vote blue, we still have a supermajority in red.
Right.
So, but I do think that we are in the middle of the death rattle of that.
Yes.
The supermajority is gone.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And But what is completely, it blows my mind. One would think that if the Republicans would see, hey, the maps are changing,
right,
and the winds of change are blowing, one would think that they would be like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be so extreme and crazy.
Yes.
It's yep, not necessarily what has happened.
I think I've always said this, that politics in Wisconsin are catching up to where the community is already at, right? And that's more transparent, more so in Green Bay than any other place.
Yeah.
But the truth is that the community's already been there. We've already said that, like, this extremism on elections and conspiracy theories, that the extremism on choice and all these other places, that most people want government to work.
Yeah.
They want it to work well, and then when they interact with it, they want it to do better.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that happens across the state, across boundaries, across political ideology. I mean, I know we're going to get into education, but that's another example where there's broad support, gun reform, broad support, getting politicians out of the way between a woman and her healthcare, broad support. These are things that are no longer on the edges of whether you vote red or blue.
Yeah.
They are things that majoritarian policies. And the thing is, the best governments are deeply reflective of that.
Yeah.
And right now ours isn't. So to me, I get the gnashing of teeth that is coming with what you call the winds of change. But my argument would be, we already changed.
Yeah.
Politics just haven't caught up. And so we're trying to figure that out.
I do want to give you credit there. So if anyone has driven into Green Bay, I said I wasn't going to talk about this, but I at least want to give you a really tip of my Boston Red Sox cap that I'm wearing. If anyone in the state of Wisconsin has driven to Green Bay, they have seen some landmarks. We have, you know, Lambeau Field. We have a beautiful city hall, and we have coal piles that are occupying the most valuable piece of riverfront property that Green Bay has.
That's right.
For now. And I mean, that's been there since I've been alive. It's been there. There was a very famous photograph of someone skiing down the coal piles.
Yes.
So they've been a butt of jokes for generations. And because of a lot of hard work due to you.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you've brought people together and created a space where parts of government that have unnecessarily, but for a long time, been at odds, stupidly so, you really helped bring that discussion forward with a very Trumpy organization, you know, in the coal guys.
Yeah.
And I, from what I understand, we're on the precipice of an agreement.
So
I know there's a lot you can't talk about, but it looks like this is going to happen for the first time in 100 freaking years.
125 years.
Jesus, Lord.
Here's what I'm going to say. I think the most powerful thing that I was able to do is just leverage the idea that people of Green Bay wanted their government and their elected officials to be more reflective of their needs and desires.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard overwhelmingly that they wanted us to figure something out to solve the coal pile challenge. And so to me, being dogged about ensuring that this is transparent, that it's reflective,
mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of leading the negotiations as the mayor's chief of staff, still involved as the state rep for Green Bay. And at the end of the day, the most powerful thing that happened was that the residents and everyday people, not who they voted for, not what supervisor, not what county executive, not what mayoral candidate, do you want to help us make a Green Bay that is more economically prosperous, and that we can build and expand on neighborhoods that need that investment by removing the coal piles.
Yeah.
And people said yes. And so we built this beautiful coalition inside and outside of City Hall, inside and outside of government, of people committed to working together across boundaries to focus on a solution. And to me, that is the beauty of what politics can be.
Yeah.
At its best, it is creating the coalition to win things for the everybody's.
Yeah.
And this is a win for the everybody. So I'm, you know, there will be a vote tonight. I'm encouraging every resident that would like to watch this historic vote, whether it's up or down, that they get to watch. I think this is an exciting opportunity.
Yeah.
And I'm just thankful to have been able to play a role. But the truth is, the thing should be going to the people of Green Bay and the residents of Brown County who refused to say that we could fail and said that they expected more from their government, more from their elected officials. And that is the power that we can change all of our cultures by making sure that we're more focused on people than politics.
Yeah, and I think it goes, there's so much credit to people who, you know, can reach across the aisle
without compromising who they are, without compromising the positions that you have, and say, hey, you know, this is the right thing to do. You support the wrong people nationally, whatever, you know, but hey, you know what? This is something that we can agree on, that this is good.
Yeah.
And you're not afraid to do what's good,
right?
You know, regardless of political opinion. So,
and here's the thing.
It's a big deal, man.
I'm thankful. I always find it funny, and I know we talked about this earlier. I don't know what people assume, but, you know, I never thought I'd be working alongside a 125-year-old company that serves coal, right? I wasn't sure that that was going to happen in my lifetime. And we may not, you know, I don't know all the political affiliations of all their staff, but I imagine that we may not align on a series of other issues. But what I will say that was really beautiful is by opening the door and creating space and welcoming people to solve a challenge, it's been a joy to work with C. Rice. It's been a joy to work with the mayor of Green Bay. It's been a joy to get to solutions with the county board. But when you create that welcoming environment that we are willing to work with you, we're not going to let the biases or perceived prejudices stop us from actually collaborating, all of a sudden it opens a door of possibility of getting things done, right? Now, we might someday have a fight about renewable energy. We might have someday a fight about whether the county board is responsive to everyone's needs in a different election. All those things get to still be true. Mm-hmm. And it also can be that we work together to solve a 125-year-old problem and do it for the people of Green Bay. And I think that's really, really beautiful to do.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, when I was in the Republican Party, it was during the heyday of like the Tea Party and Ted Cruz, eye roll, insert, please. You know, and like, and it's this mindset of if you don't support me on everything,
yes,
we cannot do what's good in any sense.
Right.
And so that's such an old, archaic, really horrible way to number one live your life, but it's a really horrible quality to have in someone that represents a very diverse community.
And here's the thing I like to tell people. I mean, I don't know what Democrats are talking about that people think we all agree on everything. I mean, if you go to a Democratic meeting, you have more opinions than Democrats. And so just to be very clear, I don't know where this alignment came from, but as a more clear view I viewed is that most people I talk to have very mixed political views. I'm not saying they're moderate, conservative, liberal. They might be great on guns and different on the environment. They might be great on the environment, but don't want to build affordable housing, right? There really is this assumption that people have lined up their strongly held beliefs based on the party system that we put on top of them. And the truth is people have a lot of mixed beliefs. And so I think, as we've talked about, and it's becoming the new mantra, it's not really right and left, it's right and wrong. And it's, are you pro-Green Bay, are you not pro-Green Bay? And when you create that compass, the coalitions look different, but they get a lot of things done.
Yeah.
And I think that is what I'm trying to do, is make government more reflective of that complexity, that you don't have to agree with me 100%, but we're going to do flood mitigation here, and we're going to build more affordable housing here. We're going to do economic development here. We're going to hold people accountable here. We're going to try to address homelessness here. And that coalition may not be the same people in every coalition, but the goal is that every one of those coalitions benefits everybody, and I think that's great.
We're talking with State Representative Ahmad Rivera-Wagner. We're going to talk on the other side of the break. We've got about a minute left. We're going to talk about the budget stuff. How do you, and leading into that, I do have a question about how you, and I think we can answer this now, but you represent Green Bay, but you're a state rep. So how do you balance, you know, doing the right thing for Green Bay, but also trying to do the right thing for the people of Wisconsin and Milwaukee and Madison and all of that, because your vote affects all of those people.
Right. Well, to me, it's always turning the needs and desires of Green Bay. I recognize that Madison, Milwaukee, Oconto County, Eau Claire, guess what? People want more housing.
Mm-hmm.
They want government more expansive. Yeah. They want to expand Badger Care. These are, to be frank, every policy that I've been working on not only benefits Green Bay, and I've heard it from the Green Bay lens, there are similar people who are going to benefit from it in other places. And so I've made my centerpiece, yes, being deeply reflective of Green Bay, but finding other allies, regardless of political affiliation, like on childcare. I'll be introducing a bipartisan bill on childcare coming out that I'm very excited about. And that's because the answer is focus on people, not the politics.
That's beautiful. Yeah, we're going to talk about the budget that's coming up and some of the things that we can look for and we can support and opportunities for all of us to get involved. So keep on listening here on The Rational Revolution. We're going to get into budget stuff here with Ahmad Rivera-Wagner, representative from the 90th. See you in a little bit.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Break yourself free from that desk and come work for Civic Media, a rapidly growing network which has positions open in Park Falls, Hayward, and Amory, Wisconsin that focus on prospecting and new account acquisitions. The ideal candidate will have prior media advertising sales experience and success, reliable transportation, and a connection to the communities in which they would sell. This position pays a base salary plus generous commissions and exceptional additional benefits. To see a full description, go to civicmedia.us and look at careers. Apply at civicmedia.us or send your resume directly to darla.isham@civicmedia.us. Civic Media is an equal opportunity employer that is committed to diversity and inclusion in the workplace.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. June is Pollinator Month, and some Wisconsin lawmakers have introduced a package of bills to protect our bees, butterflies, and other insects. The bills would prevent the DNR from using a class of pesticides called neonicotinoids, which are known to harm pollinators. It would also prevent retailers from labeling plants as pollinator-friendly if they've been treated with high levels of pesticides. Great Lakes fisheries could struggle under budget cuts. President Trump is pushing Congress to eliminate the entire biological research program at the U.S. Geological Survey. The ecosystem mission area monitors and conducts research on fish and wildlife populations in the Great Lakes and beyond. If passed, federal wildlife and fisheries research centers across Wisconsin would be shuttered. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into environmental issues across the state, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You got Mark Becker. We are sitting down with our dear friend and frequent guest, Ahmad Rivera Wagner, representative for the state of Wisconsin and the wonderful Green Bay area. As we talked about before, I want to get into the big piece of legislation that's coming up that I think you know, everybody's watching very, very closely, which is the budget.
Right.
What's going on?
So
deep breath. Here we go. I know.
So just to remind people about the, just kind of walk through the budget process.
Yeah, please.
Is that earlier on, as we get elected, the governor gets feedback from all kinds of different reps and senators, tries to put together a budget. We did a series of budget town halls back in February and March. And then the budget is released by the governor, which was about a month ago or a little bit more than a month ago. And then it goes to the Joint Finance Committee. Just to make sure people are very clear, the Joint Finance Committee is supposed to be both the House and the Assembly, and it includes Democrats and Republicans. Despite closer numbers in both houses, so it's almost 50-50 in the Senate, and it's 55-45 in the Assembly. The committee is 14 folks, 14 of which are Republicans, and only four of which are 18. Excuse me, are only four of which are Democrats.
Perfect.
So it's a 75-25 joint committee, even if the legislative body is closer to, you know, 55-45, in some cases almost 50-50. So that received it, and it took out over 600 budget line items from the governor's budget, which included increasing the special ed reimbursement rate for our public schools, which would be paramount. It took out healthy meals for all, where every kid should be able to get a meal at a school without any means testing. It took out expansion of Badger Care, legalization of cannabis, a whole suite of issues got taken out. Child care.
That are very popular.
Very popular.
With the state of Wisconsin.
So now we're in, they did a series of budget sessions where people asked for all these things to be funded. They ended up taking those things out. they now are charged with essentially coming up with a new budget. While that was happening, the governor, as well as the Senate president and the House majority leader, the Assembly majority leader, were actually coming together to see if they could come with a compromise budget negotiation. So that's not always happening at the same time, this actually happened. Those negotiations broke down last night.
Really? Okay. So we're recording this on Thursday.
Yes, recording. So last night those broke down, and there were statements out this morning that they're no longer negotiating because the governor was willing to go along with the tax cuts by the Republican Assembly and Senate, but they were refusing to do any funding on university system, childcare, and public schools. And so they have now walked away. And so we are now back to the more traditional process where the JFC puts together a budget. Then it will go to the Assembly and the Senate for votes. And then once it either passes or doesn't pass those votes, it can go to the governor's desk where he can veto the entire bill. He can line item veto elements of the bill, or he can just approve it. And those are his three options. Okay. Once it passes the Assembly and it passes.
Does it have to pass with the simple majority?
Simple majority.
Okay, so 1/50.
1/50 in both houses.
Okay.
And then he gets to have those three options. Completely veto it altogether, line item veto it, or approve it.
If when it, with the line item veto, then that goes to a supermajority, which they don't have, correct?
Correct.
Right. So that was a, just for those listeners out there, that was a really big deal. And that's why it was a really big deal to break that supermajority with those maps, because before they did have a supermajority. And the governor could do whatever he wanted to, but he was almost powerless to stop the Republicans. And so now there is some, you know, some force behind that veto pen.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's tough, right? Because we're basically legislating by elections and not legislating by policy. Right. And I'm hoping that changes. Right. I want people to say, I came here to do something. And frankly, I'm seeing cracks in the wall. Right?
Yeah.
I want to be like very gracious, because there are many Republicans who've been kind enough to work with me, engage with me, have meetings with me.
Right, they are out there.
Right, and they're interested. They want to be producers of policy. And we don't always agree on the extent of the policy or even the direction, but we're having these really meaningful and powerful conversations, and I'll be having some bipartisan bills coming out shortly. But there are cracks in the wall. But the truth is we are legislating by election and not legislating by producing good policy.
What's the area of need that's not going to be serviced or not going to be met, do you think?
I mean, I think that the public school funding is probably the most challenging. I absolutely think that expanding Badger Care is useful. We need to do that. There's money on the table that we're wasting. Postpartum expansion from 6 weeks to 12 months, which has broad bipartisan support. But something that has a legacy element to it is the notion that we have two different types of public school systems. Mm. One that is voucher-based, that have different standards, different reimbursements, and those are doing just fine. Yeah. But then we have our traditional public schools who don't even only get at this moment
struggling.
30, struggling. We're closing schools in our district.
Yeah.
They only currently get 30% of special education funding. Their voucher school counterparts get 90%.
Really?
The compromise was 60%, and that got kicked out of the budget. And so for us to believe in something like a local institution, and our Green Bay public schools are really
fantastic.
That we need to ensure that something simple like the kids who need the most help can get the same exact funding at very least as their voucher counterparts. Yeah. But that currently isn't the case. And that gap is one of the reasons why schools still have to go to referendum.
Almost every other year.
And it's because they don't get the same exact money as this alternative school system that taxpayers fund.
Right.
And so we really need to have a real conversation about long-term positive. If we don't have a system of education, we don't have our workforce challenges solved, we don't have our people being able to work in our community, we don't have places where people can meet and connect, that kids can grow from 4K to high school, right? So we really need to make sure we fund our public schools.
We're talking with Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. We're going to talk on the other side. We're going to continue this discussion about the budget. We're going to talk about education. We're going to talk about all sorts of other stuff. But stick around, because I do want to figure out housing, homelessness, and what we can do for that as well. I know that's near and dear to your heart as well. So stick around here on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't know if my mama got put down.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Some clarification on the Los Angeles protests against federal immigration police. 300 National Guard troops are now deployed in L.A. Out of 2,000, the Trump administration says have been activated. It's supported by Congressman Marlon Stutzman, Indiana Republican.
We're continuing to see this violence, and I don't think that we as Americans should put up with it, you know, whether it's in California or whether it's in Indiana.
There's no violence seen today so far. The protests are confined to just a few blocks of downtown L.A. and Paramount, a town south of Los Angeles. 11 protest arrests last night in L.A., police say. Iran's intelligence minister has claimed without offering evidence that they've seized what he calls an important treasury of documents regarding Israel's nuclear program. Russian officials say they're waiting for confirmation from Ukraine on a planned exchange of 6,000 bodies of soldiers killed in action. Russia's accusing Ukraine of delaying the process. This is ABC News.
A special night for the Brewers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports at AmFam Field, where the Brewers and Padres weekend series wrapping up today. We'll have an update tonight. Now, last night, the Brewers winning 4-3, thanks to a walk-off home run by rookie Caleb Durbin, manager Pat Murphy.
Yeah, there was a lot of great performance tonight, both sides. It was well-pitched, and, you know, this is the type of resiliency that you got to have.
In 2021, Caleb Durbin could have only dreamed of playing for the Brewers someday while in the minor leagues in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you know, it's really cool because when I was playing in the Northwoods League in Fond du Lac, you know, I was a Division III player and playing against a lot of, you know, D1 and other divisions in that league, and that was a big opportunity for me, not really knowing if I would get a chance at the next level, but, you know, was able to get my foot in the door, and looking where I'm at now and being able to go back, you know, it puts it all in perspective.
That's the Brewers' Caleb Durbin. Game 2 of the NBA Finals is tonight. The Thunder host the Pacers, Indiana winning Game 1. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Not sure if Steve Carell has big feet, but his shoes will be tough to fill. No one knows that more than Domhnall Gleeson, who will play the boss on a new spinoff of NBC's The Office. The paper will feature the same documentary film crew from The Office, even though it was never really featured, as they record the daily happenings of a dying local newspaper, and it will be brought to you by the same team that brought you the American version of The Office. Gleeson, the son of actor Brendan Gleeson, knows the challenges he faces. The actor said he recently received encouraging words from Carell's Office co-star, John Krasinski, who reassured the actor that he was in great hands with executive producer Greg Daniels. Daniels successfully rebooted Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's show of the same title from the UK. Although the title is different, the challenges faced in the paper are the same faced by those who ran a fictitious paper. Company. There is no release date yet, but the paper will premiere in September on Peacock. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Skies turning partly to mostly cloudy across the area for today as showers and thunderstorms develop. Some areas of smoke as well. Highs of the lower 70s and a west to southwest wind. Tonight, showers, a few storms around with lows in the lower 50s. Right now, it's 70.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
All right, time to visit with Melissa Baldoff as we talk climate issues. Acting FEMA chief told staff he didn't know about U.S. hurricane seasons.
What?
Speechless too.
I mean,
I love it. We're all just sitting here like, what?
If it is a joke, and I don't know that it is, it's not a funny one. We've seen more deadly hurricanes, so we have every reason to expect it will be a bad hurricane season.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from the show Young Sheldon, actor Lance Barber, and we'll talk about the amazing career and life of Michael J. Fox. We are going to light it like it's Monday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. Hey, if you haven't already, you should download the Civic Media app. They have every episode from every one of our shows, not just mine, but download that anywhere you get your app store, Android, Apple, whatever. Download that app. Listen to every single one of your favorite shows across the Civic Media Radio Network. Our podcasts are also available wherever you get your podcasts. If you like this show, if you like any of the other ones, share them. Like our pages, all that good stuff. We're going to continue our discussion here with Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. We're talking about the budget. You have a fascinating story about where you grew up and how you grew up.
Yeah.
And my wife and I were just talking about it yesterday, about how you were a product of some of the programs that we desperately need here in this state. Talk about that. And what's the status of some of those?
And for those who don't know, I've been very open about my personal background. You know, I was raised by a single mom. She had me at 16. She was ultimately kicked out of her house. So we experienced homelessness for the first 10 years of my life.
What a resilient woman.
She's an incredible. I'm very lucky to have been raised by such a strong, powerful, smart woman. And it was tough, right? Our homelessness didn't look like what everyone sees. We slept in cars. Sometimes we were in shelters. Sometimes we had a really bad landlord, but that's what we could afford. But then she ended up being... at one point in an abusive relationship that affected the housing situation. So I watch firsthand how systems can both be broken, but I've also seen how they can rise, right? And so one of the really incredible things that happened to me and my family is that we got into the Habitat for Humanity program. Yeah. And I tell people that my politics are very much like this program, how I experienced it, which is we didn't ask people who they voted for or their political beliefs. We said, can you help? And literally a bunch of people, including me, with me and my mom, built the house that my mom still lives in.
That's so cool.
And so to me, that tells a story about what we can do when we put some things aside and focus on outcomes. And it changed our lives. You know, I became one of the first people in my family to go to college. Mm. My younger brother and sister, who are significantly younger than me, have never experienced homelessness. They're both doing incredibly well. They have their own families of their own. The power of a stable home.
Yes.
We had SNAP benefits, which at the time used to be physical food stamps, which we used to use. Yep. You know, we went to the pantries that sometimes go empty. We had evaporated milk and government peanut butter. We were those people. And so I often tell people that why it matters to me is that you may not look at me and see the position I'm in now. And what it felt like to be on the other end of that. And frankly, in the positions I've been in, those people didn't always look highly on us. And it wasn't always Republican or Democrat. It was that we didn't belong in these places of power, that these people were not desperate, but deceiving and lying and hiding. And so I deeply care, and why I love living in Green Bay is because we do reward work and we care about people living in this community with it. We take care of each other in this community. And so those are my politics. And so that's why I'm excited. Mm. Not only about this budget process, I think budgets to connect it are a statement of values. And so it matters what you put in them, what you take out of them.
Yeah.
It tells you a story about what we care about, what we're willing to fight about and lift up. And so I was very proud of the governor's budget that included so many of these really powerful items in Green Bay that people still need to this day. So I might not need them. But the goal is that there's less people that go through what I went through, not that we make it harder for people that experience what I experience to thrive. And so there are hungry people in this community. Yeah. There is housing that's needed in this community. There is much needed childcare. There are public schools. My public school where I grew up wasn't good. I had a 50% dropout rate in my high school.
Really?
Yes. We had lots of street violence in our schools, right? Mm. Green Bay public schools aren't like that.
No, no.
They're incredible, right? Where most kids are going to 2 and 4 year institutions, that they're being able to leave college and go right into a job because of apprenticeships. We had none of this where I grew up. And so to me, protecting these kind of institutions, making sure our local government works better, making sure our public schools work, that people have the health care that they need. I remember that we didn't get certain things covered, right? Like I didn't get dental care all the time right away because it was so expensive and out of pocket that we delayed major procedures for my mom because that we, you know, rationed her insulin because of the cost it was at one point per month. I mean, these are things
awful.
That no one should do.
Yeah.
But the problem is that a lot of families are doing that even now. And we need to have budgets that make it easier for everyday people to just live and be able to go after the dreams that they want to go after.
So what, I mean, were there parts of those provisions that were in the budget that make it easier for people to live that were taken out?
Yes. Thank you for asking that. One, I know we talked a bit at the top just on food because I do think it's important, is the Healthy Meals for All program.
Yeah.
This is a program we spend more money policing how much money you should pay for food than we actually do the cost of the food. And so this Healthy Meals program is not only like fiscally smart, it is actually like a deep value that every kid, a fed kid can learn. A fed kid can play the sport they want to play. They can go to the apprenticeship that they need. It really matters that the kids don't go hungry.
Well, and a lot of, not to get on a soapbox, but a lot of like where this money goes to is local freaking farmers.
Correct. That's a great
right.
point. That's a great point.
And so we talk about, you know, hey, this is hurting. Traditionally, a lot of these farmers are a little more red.
Right.
That hurts them.
Right. And what's so nice about our Green Bay Public Schools around that, what they do for food, is that it is a local ecosystem.
Yes.
The goal is, we do it, like, again, this is why I love this community. Our idea is that we take advantage of the fact that we are a community that can have a dairy farmer and a professor,
yes.
all living in the same community. And so tapping in that really works really well for me. And so that was taken out of the budget. We will be reintroducing it as a standalone bill, but it's just an example of something that is fiscally smart, value added,
yeah.
but is also something that our communities could benefit from. And as a kid that used to go hungry, because we had, you know, by the end of the month, we ran out of food, we ran out of food stamps, we had to go to the pantries, you know, it was, and it wasn't always great having, we had tickets back then. So
yes.
you got like a different ticket
yes.
and a different, and if you lost that ticket,
you're
you
screwed.
Got, you literally yeah. got a cup of water
yeah.
and a peanut butter sandwich.
That's so sad.
Right. And so imagine removing the stamp.
I'm allergic to peanut butter. That wouldn't work very well.
Right.
But then that's a thing.
Right. Imagine, so we eliminating the shame that
yeah.
comes with
yeah.
just struggling. Right. And so I really think this Healthy Meals for All program. The other was the expansion of Badger Care. You know, we're leaving money on the table with the federal government that we could expand and cover yeah. more people, particularly our most vulnerable people. And we haven't seen that taken that achieved. Again, it would be fiscally smart. We would get
yeah.
more money from the federal government than we would be expending in the program. But we have chosen not to do it. We're one of, I believe, less 38 states have done this. And we're one of the few that haven't. It might actually be 42, but I'll have to get that number exactly. But 42 states have actually expanded Medicaid, and that's Badger Care for here in Wisconsin. And we have not, so we're leaving money on the table, and less vulnerable people are being served, and that was taken out of the budget.
It's so sad because not, you know, just because you have need doesn't mean you somehow lose your dignity.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, geez. And the dignity... Need knows no political affiliation.
And that's a reminder that, like, I always tell people, you never know. I'm one tragedy away from going back to where we
right,
started. Right.
Same.
We don't know. And yeah. so I don't want to build a government that puts up walls. I want to build a government that builds bridges.
Right.
And that is, that to me matters, that in our worst moments, when we need a little help and a little bit of assistance, the government at its best is a hand up, not a yeah. handout. And I really think that these kind of bills and practices really make a difference. The other one that was obviously stripped is Child Care Counts, which is a pilot program that we launched during COVID that created a subsidy for families
yeah.
And child care providers. And we saw incredible success. It was one of the most successful programs that we've seen in Wisconsin
what
history.
What does it do?
Essentially, it's a subsidy that goes directly to the child care provider that allowed them to pay folks more money, allowed them to create more slots for children, and reduced the price overall for families to cover the cost of childcare. That has been removed from the budget. This has bipartisan support. There are people who care about this on every rural, urban, Republican, Democrat, south of the state, north end of the state, whether you're close to, you know, on the lake or in the rural areas, everyone saw a benefit to this program, but it was taken out of the budget. And again, I don't know why. We
yeah.
aren't getting reasons why these are being stripped. I'd love to learn more, but these are majoritarian.
We'll have Robin Voss on the show.
Yeah. right. But these are majoritarian policies that actually are fiscally smart, are filled with the values that we care about.
Wildly supported by the people.
And make a difference in people's lives. And for some reason, those have been stripped out of the budget.
We're talking with State Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. Why? What did it get out of that?
And this is my hope for all of politics. And I know, again, I'm probably the nerdy, hopeful guy.
Same.
It's just at the end of the day, it feels like people are like they're all waiting for the 2026 to come.
Yeah.
To see what will happen.
Right.
And I keep telling people there are families who struggle with childcare now.
Yeah.
There are people who are struggling with healthcare access now. Mm. Our schools are shutting down buildings. They're letting go of teachers. We're seeing people affected by the federal DOGE cuts. I mean, these are things that are happening right now. I don't think people should have to wait to the next election to see their government work for them and to do what I believe we've been sent there to do, which is to do more outcome-driven policy work. Not just a good name, not just enough money, but that these things actually turn into better outcomes for everyday people. And so those are the policies I'm backing. Those are the policies I'm working on.
Yeah.
And I'm being dogged as I possibly can, but it's a fascinating horse race in Madison that I can see why people get frustrated.
Well, and it would be cool to have women not have to worry about being governed by a law that was created in 1848. 100%.
And this is what I mean. These are majoritarian policies and folks are just trying to eke out make it to the next election.
Right.
And my hope is that the more and more that we elect people oriented elected officials, I think we need better elected officials on every side and every party. I think we need to improve folks' interest, not in just winning the next election, but like having tangible wins for everyday people.
Right.
I know that sounds radical, I guess, but I just think that should be the standard. And it doesn't always feel that way. But so choice, schools, healthcare, childcare, these are all things that aren't even really a debate.
No, and it's frustrating because I live in Pulaski, and our school district, and I'm friends with someone that's on the school board, and she's a wonderful person. They just did a referendum a couple of years ago that updated beautiful updates to our elementary school that our kids go to. And I was talking to her, and she's like, "Yeah, we're probably gonna have to go to a referendum in
right now."
Like, holy crap!
Again.
And I'm friends with someone on the Green Bay school board, and they said the same thing. Like, we're gonna have to go to referendum. Oh my god!
Right, and it really comes
that's
down,
so wrong.
And it really comes down to that. The two-tiered system that we have where our traditional public schools don't get the same reimbursements versus the voucher school program that gets completely different set of standards and reimbursement mechanisms. And so it just sucks because whether you are pro or con school choice, let's have the debate. You can have that conversation. But you shouldn't get a whole different set of monies and standards. That doesn't make any sense. And for me, I don't think voucher schools should exist. I think it's not fair. But at the end of the day, if they did exist, the idea that our traditional public schools don't get the same benefits is somewhat of we're enshrining inequity, and that's just cruel.
It's very wrong. And like when you have in the Green Bay area, you have schools that are trying to exist on crumbs, and then you drive down 29 and you've got a school that was just built that looks like freaking Hogwarts.
Right.
My God. I cannot say thank you enough for your friendship and for coming on and just talking about these common sense things. And fighting for not just the people of your district, but fighting for the people of Wisconsin.
Oh, thank you.
We're so lucky that you're here and doing the people's work down there in Madison.
I'm trying, and I know we didn't get a chance to talk about the gun package that
I want to talk about that.
So at some point we should talk some other time. But there's a lot of common sense gun reforms. I think that again, majoritarian folks. The majority of people support.
Let's do it. Thank you so much. You're on the Rational Revolution.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed two election bills May 2nd, one of which includes provisions for poll workers to challenge the citizenship of voters in the polling place, a ban on ranked choice voting, and a higher bar for third parties. Among several new provisions, House File 954 authorizes state election officials to access federal agency databases and gives local election officials authority to challenge citizenship of a registered voter at the polls. A recent presidential executive order now allows access to those databases. If a voter is not able to provide documentation at the polls, they would be forced to use a provisional ballot. Only days before the 2024 election, the Secretary of State's office challenged the eligibility of over 2,100 registered voters. Most were naturalized citizens or data errors, while 277 were registered non-citizens. Of those, only 35 voted out of 1.7 million ballots cast. Pro-voter groups argue such mass challenges intimidate legitimate naturalized citizens from voting. Two provisions in 954 attempt to protect major party power. It bans ranked choice voting for any election in Iowa and raises the bar for third parties to field candidates. Third parties now need to garner 2% of the vote in three consecutive elections to qualify for the ballot. We have more on HF 954 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back. So many thanks to Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. I'm so grateful for his time and his friendship. He's absolutely one of the good guys. So, you know, Wisconsin, if you're represented by him, you are very, very fortunate. And I know he said, I'm happy here and all of that stuff. But I hope he's open to doing more, because the more people he represents, the better it is for the communities. But today, I'd like to speak from the heart, not as someone who's a broadcaster, but as a husband, a grandson-in-law, and a partial witness to a really remarkable life. And it's the life of Thelma, my wife's grandmother. We talked a little bit about her before, but, you know, if you're lucky, you have a Thelma in your life, too. Thelma wasn't famous. You won't find her name etched in like marble or flashing across the screen. But if you had the good fortune to meet her, even once, you really left changed. She had that kind of like a quiet gravity, you know, the kind that didn't demand attention, but it did command respect. What made Thelma so unforgettable, it wasn't one grand gesture, but it was just the way she lived, consistently, courageously, and filled with love. She taught us, she's taught me too, you know, without need for a sermon or a speech, things that feel more urgent today than ever before. To be present for those who you love, and to live a life that matters, not necessarily to the world at large, but to those who mean the most. Thelma, she definitely believed in standing her ground, not in like a loud confrontational way, but with steady conviction. When something wasn't right, she didn't wait for someone else to speak up. She showed us that dignity is a form of resistance. She taught her children and her children's children
that doing what's right may not be easy, but it is always worth it. And then there was her presence as a gift that we often overlook in a world where we rush from one thing to the next. And when you sat at Thelma's kitchen table, she was with you. She was with you. There were no distractions, no phones, just a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, and maybe a bite to eat. She was very well known for her cooking. She was good. But then you also had her undivided attention. And in those moments, she gave you something priceless. And it was the feeling that you mattered, that you were seen, and that you belonged. And that's a lesson that we really need now more than ever, to slow down, to look at our loved ones in the eye, and to be there, not just in body, but in heart and mind, like she was. And finally, Thelma understood that a meaningful life isn't measured in big accolades, but in impact. It's measured in the way we show up for one another, in the meals cooked, in the stories that are shared, and the hands held during hard times. Her life was her legacy. It certainly wasn't easy. It wasn't perfect, I'm sure. But my goodness, it was full. And her life was rooted in kindness, truth, and courage. And I think we could all live a life like that. In the later years of Thelma's life, my wife, Elisa, showed what true love is all about. She wasn't just a granddaughter, but a caregiver. I mean, there were countless days, every week, where she'd stop by her grandma's house, not just to check in, but to be there. She bathed her. She listened to her stories. And she just was a comforting presence. Elisa gave so much of herself, not out of obligation, but out of the purest love that one can imagine. She's always been that way, my wife, Elisa, unwavering, unselfish, and she never sought anything in return because her joy came from knowing that her grandma was comfortable, happy, and that she wasn't alone. I think that is a reminder to all of us how powerful love is when it's given freely. And how much of an impact even the smallest amount of kindness can have on the ones that we love and that we care for. That's so important. And I think, and she, you know, my wife, I said, oh, are you going to make a post and talk about your grandma and all that? And she says, well, I don't need to post something on Facebook for people to see. But I do think that she deserves some recognition. And because that example that she sets for us, for our children, is something that, even though I don't do it for that, no, but it should be recognized. Goodness should be celebrated. And, you know, I just want to recognize that, to say to her that you are a shining example of what it means to love without reservation. And your grandma Thelma was so lucky to have you by her side. And I know that she carried that love with you, with her, every moment as you carry hers with you now. Thank you for showing all of us the true meaning of love and compassion. And I would hope that we can all share that spirit every day that we live. Be like Thelma. And love like my wife. I'm lucky because I get to see that every day. And I don't ever want to take that for granted. And I hope that you have a Thelma and an Elisa with you in your life. And if you don't, one's out there for you. Be good. Thank you so much for listening. I love you all. And we'll see you next week. Make sure if you like this, like it. Share it on Facebook. And keep on keeping on. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker here for Civic Media.
listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. 300 National Guard troops are now deployed in Los Angeles out of 2,000 the Trump administration says have been activated. While some Republican lawmakers support it and Democratic lawmakers say it's not necessary, the protests are confined to just a few blocks of downtown L.A. and Paramount, a town south of Los Angeles. In L.A., ABC's Alex Stone.
Overnight, there were more clashes between law enforcement and protesters. It is quiet now in the streets, but unclear with the National Guard in place what it will be like going forward.
11 protest arrests were made last night, says the LAPD. Russian officials say they are waiting for confirmation from Ukraine on a planned exchange of 6,000 bodies of soldiers killed in action. A Russian negotiator says his country's delivered over 1,200 bodies.